You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello, and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am your co-host, the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, is Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's up, my man?
It's Friday. I realized yesterday that the weekend burnt me out a little bit on wrestling, so I'm taking a very mini wrestling show break after I caught up on this week's WWE. So I'll be back for Raw though.
I hear you. Yeah. After a week like that, like after a week of All In and the travel and everything like that, it's like, man, you can't top that. You know what I mean? Like just kind of got to maybe take a little bit of time off, you know?
Yeah.
But like you said, man, it's Friday. We just kind of wanted to get on here and just kind of chit-chat a bit. The Wrestling Observer newsletter came out, and they had all the particulars, all the numbers on All In and StarCast, and we just kind of wanted to chat about them a little bit. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about was we actually closed out Wednesday show talking about it, and that was the exact number of the attendance. They even broke that down. It was 11,263, and that's the t-shirts that you're ordering, everybody. And they even had the combination. Meltzer said that number, 11,263, is the combination of the 10,541 tickets that sold and like the working personnel. The rest of it made up with working personnel. Wow, it took several people to put this thing on the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder, I guess, were those people Ring of Honor people? Because Ring of Honor, they didn't truly put their name on this, but Ring of Honor was the major promotion that was tied with this, correct?
Yes, as in they used all of Ring of Honor's equipment.
Okay, gotcha.
Like the ring, the lighting, the stage, all that belonged to Ring of Honor.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't know that. And what about New Japan? Was New Japan involved in anything like that?
Nope. They gave Okada permission. I believe they gave Okada permission to work. And all the people that have joint New Japan contracts, they gave them permission to be shown on Fight TV.
Really?
Yeah. So
I like it.
But the only exclusive New Japan person that was on the show was Okada. Everyone else generally has a combination New Japan and ROH contract.
Wow. Okay. This one right here, this was the big one right here, and this is what I was waiting for. And I think I actually said this to you on the drive back whenever we were coming back from Chicago, and I was wondering what the live gate would be. And we kind of speculated, and I can't remember exactly what I speculated, but this is the live gate total right here. They brought in 458,525. That is amazing. And that's an indie show, bro.
That's an indie show with, like, definitely not the media and marketing that goes behind something like a normal ROH or WWE show. You just think about it. It was pretty much advertised on social media and through the Being the Elite website. I mean, Being the Elite show.
Right. Yeah, I cannot believe $458,000. Meltzer goes on to say that the key event shirt, the all-in shirt, sold out at 3:30. That's 30 minutes after the doors opened. The all-in shirt was completely sold out. He also said that the merchandise lines were as long as he has ever seen in his professional wrestling career. That is saying something, man, because Meltzer's been around since the 80s.
Yeah, that's the longest merchandise line I've ever seen.
And you've been, you went to, what, nine pay-per-views just last year? Just
I was going to say, I've been to 7 WrestleManias, and nothing has touched that.
Right. Do you know... Well, he said, he goes on to say that tickets were priced way too inexpensive for the live event gate. Even based in Chicago, with the idea their merchandise partner, Pro Wrestling Tees, was located in town and expecting big merchandise numbers, they greatly undershot there as well. So, I read on, I think it was Cage Side Seats reported that Pro Wrestling Tees had topped $500,000 in merchandise. So if you put Pro Wrestling Tees $500,000, and I understand that Cody and the Bucks and ROH will get a cut of that, but obviously, you know, they split the merchandise money with Pro Wrestling Tees in some sort of percentage. But if you look at the $458,000 live gate mixed with $500,000 at Pro Wrestling Tees / on Pro Wrestling Tees' website, I mean, dude, that's nearly $1 million right there. That is incredible, my man.
Yeah, that is nuts. I mean, just think about, I mean, for an independent show, I mean, it's completely the independent shirts, but we could probably tell you that it sold that many shirts, because you couldn't go anywhere in our vicinity without seeing a Bullet Club, SCU, or someone on the card shirt.
Right.
Yeah. It was like I said, just out of this world. It's like, it's one of those things. I'm very proud of the boys and how they were able to pull this off.
Yeah, man, I was listening to some other podcasts this past week, and I kind of waited till today to talk about it, and I was wanting to talk about it because, just like you said, that was something that you had told me multiple times since All In's been over, and that it was how proud you are of Cody and the Young Bucks and stuff like that, and I wanted to talk about that a little bit today because... I've said in the past, like, there was a couple of matches, was it last year in San Francisco or Long Beach won, I can't remember, but Cody and Kenny Omega had some one-on-one matches, or a one-on-one match, rather, and it was an okay match, but it just did not seem to click fully, and... I had kind of rode Cody kind of hard for it. I was like, Cody's in-ring style just hasn't changed enough. Like, maybe he's wrestling that WWE style. And, you know, Kenny Omega's obviously wrestling a strong style. And then, you know, so I go, I'm completely open-minded going into All In, and I see Cody wrestle an 80s style NWA match against another guy that can wrestle an 80s style NWA match, and Cody turned me into where I was like, he's wrestling this WWE style, to holy shit, this guy is gonna bring back that classic 80s style of wrestling. This guy is fantastic. He is truly made. Cody turned me into a guy that thought, that was, you know, thinking in my head, oh, you know, hey, Cody's, he's not the best wrestler in the world. He's not the best entertainer, but obviously he's hot on the indie scene right now. The Young Bucks are hot on the indie scene, and they're changing the world. But now my, you know, I still believe that part, but now on top of that, I'm saying Cody's one of the best entertainers on the independent scene. He's not just one of the hottest acts. He's one of the best wrestlers out there. He's one of the best entertainers out there.
I mean, and that's the whole thing with it. Look at, you know, you got to look at the dad, you know, in this case. Cody, he's grown up in the wrestling business from Dusty, and it all goes back to Dusty. Dusty was an average worker, right?
Right.
But he was freaking charismatic. So you could go out there and do all the hurricanranas or whatever, but then with one elbow, he could have the whole room up on its feet.
Yeah.
So
one simplistic elbow.
One simplistic elbow. He danced. He's a fat white guy, and he danced his jiggly dance, and everybody loved it, and everybody be partying. He got the poke about Dusty over. So yeah. I'm saying. So he comes from that. His dad is work smarter, not harder. I mean, look at Dustin. Dustin, he works smart. He doesn't do a lot of hurricanranas, flip. That's just it's pretty much what I'm saying. It's the family style. It's the Rhodes way. You're more of a character than doing all the working stuff. I mean, Dustin Rhodes, Goldust. That's what he's known for, right?
Right.
It wasn't him out there doing hurricanranas and having 60-minute Ironman matches. But he's one of the most memorable characters of the 90s because it was about the character. So that's what Cody is. Like, his match wasn't told in the ring. To us it was, because that's the style we like. But no, to the people that don't like his style, it was everything around it. It was all the guys coming out in the jacket. Him even bringing his dog to the ring. It was Nick Aldis with the 4-on-4. And it was the over, you know, dyeing his hair blonde like his dad. I mean, even the boots. He had 605 on the boots because that's when TBS Saturday Night Wrestling used to start. You know, every piece of what he did was a part of the show. So
did you notice his belt as well? I noticed it on the replay, and this goes along exactly with what you're saying. It said "Do the Work" on his belt, and the DO was black with yellow polka dots like his dad.
Yeah.
The word "the" was in gold, shiny gold, like his brother, in gold dust. And "work" was written in the American flag for the American Nightmare, and it was for each of them.
Yes, and that goes into everything. This night was a love letter to his family. Like, even the name of his, like, all his stuff was the American Nightmare before, and it had the Bullet Club symbol. Then he did the Nightmare Family stuff that's just his symbol. The jacket that's just his symbol. Even put out shoes that are just his symbol. Because that's what it was about. It was about the Rhodes family and a love letter to them. And he built this match up between him, Nick Aldis, Dave Lagana, and Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan, and the 10 Pounds of Gold. They built this match up to be the most important match on this card and possibly most important match in wrestling. They could have went out of there and Aldis could have, like, threw a punch. Cody could have hit both moves and pinned him, and it probably wouldn't have changed anybody's mind on the match because the match was built up. The match was made to be important before they ever even threw a punch.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And just his marketing skills, and that is something, and I respect it even more every time I hear you break it down like that. And, you know, every time I've heard you break it down several times since the show, and every time I pick up on something new, on something different that you're saying, because you notice all those little details about the marketing portion of what Cody is doing. But he's just turned me into such a fan, and he's reminding me something that I kind of got away from there a little bit, and that's that I absolutely love that 80s style of wrestling, that storytelling wrestling, that Ric Flair, and New Age guys that wrestle like that in The Miz. You know, it doesn't all need to be backflips and stuff like that that the Young Bucks do. And I'm not saying that I don't like that style of wrestling either. I obviously love the Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, the Bandido, the Rey Mysterio style of wrestling, but I love what Cody is doing, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's an old school style of storytelling with a new school twist. Cody came from the WWE, so of course he picked up information on production from there. It's just like I said, I'm a big Cody mark, but everyone kind of seems to be, like, I listen to Voices of Wrestling, everyone seems to be kind of turning the corner. I'm like, because Cody doesn't feel the need to put on a 5-star match every time, but he will put on a 5-star show.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. That's a real good way to put it. So I'm reading the Wrestling Observer yesterday, and Dave Meltzer is breaking down the show, and he starts off by talking about MJF. What does MJF stand for again?
Maxwell Jacob Friedman.
God, I love that name, man. Meltzer referred to him as a new school guy that is an old school guy. And he goes on to talk about he's a guy that wrestles an old school style. What he meant by that was is a guy that wrestles an old school style and pays, you know, he wrestles an old school style and does a lot of personality and character work. And it was just really cool how he characterized that. He said, you know, instead of doing a ton of backflips and stuff like that, there's a group of people now that are coming up that wrestle more of an old school 80s style and are doing a ton of character work. As like a throwback to the 80s. And now that I read that about MJF, I'm like, man, that's exactly what Cody is doing. Cody has been that guy that ever since he hit the indie scene, he's been basically a throwback to his dad's era of wrestling, has he not?
Yeah, and he says it all the time, how he's like, I am way more conservative than Kenny. And I'm way more conservative than the Bucks. And he's like, I can wrestle that style. I choose not to. I am the less is more guy.
Wow. See, I didn't know that he said that. And also, man, I just did not. I was just not giving it up to Cody. I wasn't meaning, and I wasn't hating on him, and I wasn't meaning to not give it up to him. I just, as a wrestling fan, I think I was watching what was hot, watching what was the in thing right now, and I'm not disparaging Strong Style in any way. I still love watching, 2015 AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm not discrediting that. I still love that. But Cody, I did not realize, and I did not fully grasp what Cody was doing, and that was, like you said, he was paying homage to his dad and almost bringing back, almost single-handedly working on bringing back that 80s style of wrestling where you pay close attention to personality and character work. And now you see MJF is starting to do, is coming in doing the same thing. Yeah, it's badass, man.
It's what EC3 does. I mean, and that's the whole thing with wrestling. And if you noticed on the All In show, it was a wrestling variety show. You got hardcore, you got the deathmatch style, you got the lucha style in the main event, you got the contrast in styles. You have the New Age style with Kenny Omega versus the Pentagon, which is more of a lucha deathmatch style. You got High Flyer MJF. You got, High Flyer Matt Cross against Character Worker MJF. Classic heel, classic face. They gave you a variety of different wrestling styles. They even gave you a wrestler versus a non-wrestler. And then they gave you a women's match. They also gave you intergender wrestling. Any type of wrestling that exists, you got in this show.
That's so cool, man. I cannot believe that I was not giving it up to Cody. I can't believe you didn't shake me and be like, Jordan, what the hell, man?
It's one of those things. I do realize his style's not for everyone, you know? And that's why I don't fight it. I'm like, Cody's my favorite wrestler, because I don't consider wrestling just the performance between the ropes. I consider the wrestling everything, your character work, your interviews, your everything. So while he may be only a C in the ring, I think he blows Kenny Omega away on the mic.
That's true. See, I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and while, you know, while Kenny Omega might, yeah, he can go 60 minutes to an hour, you know, and he can do things you've never seen. But when you're watching that match with Cody, all the in-between stuff, the way he sells, the way he sold for Nick Aldis, he sold so hard. When he finally came back, it made the KO comeback so much bigger. There were people in the audience, including me, that thought Cody wasn't going over. So it built up to that moment. And it was just with his character work, with his selling, you know. Like I said, he didn't get a lot of offense in that match. The way the match was written, if you noticed it, it was that Nick Aldis was one step ahead of him the whole match.
Yeah.
When he jumped off the top and he came down, Nick Aldis catches him with the forearm. Nick Aldis busts him open. I mean, Cody played the 80s babyface perfectly. But in that moment, he got hot and he caught him with the finisher. And he caught him with the finisher. Then he went, oh, I'm going to go for the super finisher. Nick Aldis was ahead of it. And then Cody got ahead of him one time, was on that sunset flip. He got ahead of him, got down, and won the match. And it was the biggest pop ever. And it was like that part. They built the whole show for that. That whole match, the whole show, all the pomp and circumstance was for that pop.
And it was absolutely worth it, man.
And it was like the crowd shook. You know, even the people on TVs, like, that was one of the loudest pops when he won.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Dude, I got some more numbers for you here. Fight TV grossed more than $1 million between the internet pay-per-view sales and the StarCast pay-per-view sales. That would probably indicate an excess of 20,000 internet pay-per-view buys, which was well above expectations. Dude, $1 million for Fight TV. And obviously that is, you know, that will also be split with Cody and the Young Bucks, and I assume Ring of Honor. I don't know. I don't think anyone knows what the percentage, splits are going to be for everyone. But I think it's safe to say that All In and StarCast was a success. $1 million on the pay-per-view buys.
Yeah. I mean, and what they're telling ROH, I mean, they grossed probably more than ROH will gross in any show this year.
Oh yeah.
They sold more merchandise than ROH will sell this year. And no one, I mean, I didn't even think of it this way. So believe me, I'm taking this from WrestleNomics and what Mookie did. Mookie Ghana Harrison, one of the co-hosts, said, he's like, what this was a big advertisement to all the people that are bidding on them. Look what we can do. Look what we bring. Now pay us. We can do this for you too.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, so the Young Bucks and Cody might not have made a lot of money off this show. but they made a lot of money off of this show.
Right.
They might not have made any, a lot of money in September off this show, but they made money in January off this show. And Cody, as the businessman he is, he's from the WWE. He knows how it works better than anybody else. He's not going to let any of them take a dime more than what the, a dime less than what they're worth.
That's a very good point, man. That is a very good point.
Because he already walked away from money because he said, I'm worth more than you're willing to pay me. So when he comes back, he's basically cashing in his lottery ticket now. So he's not going to cash the lottery ticket in for less than the maximum amount.
Yeah. Can you picture the Cody, or excuse me, the Young Bucks and Cody going back to the WWE in January and making and having a contract that is smaller than Roman Reigns?
No.
You think all three of them deserve more than what Roman... And I'm assuming that Roman is the highest paid full-time wrestler.
Yeah, he makes about $5 million a year.
Roman does?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So, do you think...
The Bucks outsell him in merchandise easily.
Nice, nice.
I mean...
And we see what they do, what they can do, you know, if you put their name on a indie show along with Cody, you know, yes, they can fill 10,000 seats. And, dude, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they wouldn't have done this same exact thing with a 15 or even 20,000 seat arena.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think they would have, especially at the price point that they had, they could have sold out a 20,000 arena.
Yeah.
The thing with Cody, I've stated this before, I think on this show, I think more important than money with him will be creative control. That is what he would negotiate. That would be, to him, would be more important than money.
Really?
Yeah. Because he uses the wrestling, when he's talking about the promos and everything, he's like, I am the band, and I'm going out there to play my music. I can't have anyone tell me how to play my music.
I love that. That's a quote from Cody?
That's a quote from Cody. Direct quote. I can't have anyone tell me how to play my music. Wow. He's like, I used to be a lot more agreeable, and he's like, I used to be a lot more easy to work with. Then I walked away, and I went to the indies, and I said, if I'm going to do this, he's going to do it his way. And he says, you can give him notes. Like, in the match, you can give him a time frame and a finish, and he'll work with you. He'll do that. You can give him the notes of what you want to cover in a promo. He'll do that. But as far as written promos, matches made out by agents, he's done with that.
That's cool, man. So what happens? Let's say in January he goes back to the WWE along with Cody, or excuse me, along with Matt and Nick. Do you think that there is an amount of money that would cause them to go to the WWE and conform to what the WWE does with agents calling every move? Or do they say, hey, we'll come in, but you're going to pay us more than Roman, and we're not dealing with any agents or anything like that. We've got a certain amount of creative control. Do you think that they would require both money and creative control to come to WWE?
Okay, and this is how I see it. I think Bushiroad, who does JPW, and Sinclair, who does ROH. Sinclair is technically bigger than the WWE. Sinclair is a media conglomerate, so they're bigger than the WWE.
I think they own like 59 TV stations, right?
Yes, so between Sinclair and New Japan, I think there's going to be a big offer, and I think they're going to get a lot of creative control. The thing with the WWE, they don't like to give away creative control. So they might make an even bigger offer, but they'll have to conform. I think the Young Bucks are more likely to do that in the WWE, conform and get their check, because they haven't got their big payday yet. They've made a lot of money on their own, selling T-shirts, the Hot Topic deal, all that stuff. I'm not saying they're not financially okay, but they want that big payday, you know what I mean? So they may be more likely to do it. But since they say they're sticking together, when he says, no matter what we do, we're doing it together, to me, and this is just completely conjecture, paying attention to every word Cody Rhodes says, I don't think they're going to the WWE.
Really?
I don't think there's a number that – I think it would have to be a ridiculous number. I think basically in a like Roman makes $5 million a year guaranteed, right? So that's – well, that's his guarantee or whatever with
– his downside guarantee.
Yeah. So I think the Bucks would probably have to be that or more a piece – for them to just give it all up.
Okay.
But, and like I say, it's complete conjecture. I don't know these guys or whatever. Right. But I'm thinking if they're getting offered $5 million apiece, let's say a 3-year deal where they're guaranteed $15 million, and then, of course, they get their pay-per-view bonuses, the merchandise and stuff, to the point where they can make up to $10 million a year or more, just depending on what they do, and all they have to do is wrestle, they'd be stupid not to take it.
Right, right.
And WWE's not going to bury him because they're not going to bury $10 million a year.
No, they're going to be on the top of the ticket.
Because look at AJ. They're only paying him $3 million a year. Any merchandise that comes out has AJ's name on it. AJ's the WWE champion. He's featured on SmackDown for pretty much, he has been the longest reigning champion on SmackDown. You know, he's featured. They're not gonna bring you in, pay you $5 million a year, and then have you lose every night.
Right.
So, but that's being said, it's if they think they're worth that number. And to me, with Young Bucks running Young Bucks merch, Hot Topic, how much they make in meet and greets and sales and appearance fees, I think they probably make about $5 million a year, like combined. You know, maybe I'm underestimating them, but I think they may, because, you know, they're not working 10,000 seat stadium. So they probably make about $5 million. If they can get that guaranteed, they're going to, I mean, I don't see them not taking it. And Cody didn't leave for money. He left for a spot.
Yeah.
So and when he comes back, he wants a spot. That's what he wants. He wants to be at the top. He didn't leave for money. I mean, he's been with WWE 20 years, probably went to the Performance Center, maybe even ran it. Because, you know, that's in his blood. But that wasn't what he was. He thought they didn't see what he saw more in himself than they saw in him. He went out to build his kingdom, and he has.
Yeah, I would imagine that, and I don't know this, and I haven't heard Cody specifically say this, but I would imagine that when Cody initially left, his thought process was, I'm going to go out, I'm going to reinvent myself, I'm going to show WWE what they're missing out on, and then I'm going to come back for a big payday, main event, you know, come back as a main eventer, and get a run with the world title. And then I think he got out there, he connected with the Young Bucks, he saw, however you word that, what exactly he could do. He saw that he and the Young Bucks are changing the world, changing wrestling forever, and now I believe he's thinking, you know, hey, we don't need the WWE.
Absolutely. I think if Sinclair is smart, this is what I would do. I would pay them a comfortable number. And then they have Sinclair owns media or whatever. I would put on a weekly show.
Yep.
And that's what I would do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I know that I seen an op-ed about Sinclair this a little while back. And it was on Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and you know, they weren't talking the highest about Sinclair, but you know, that's not related to what we're talking about. But the reason I say that is because that's where I learned that I believe Sinclair at the time, this was early this year, or late last year, they owned like 59 TV stations, and I'm assuming that that's at the very least stayed the same, if not grown. So if you see, you know, what if they, if they're smart and they can see what Cody and the Young Bucks are doing, they have the ability to give them a 2-hour live show every week instead of, you know, the syndicated 1-hour show that ROH currently has. You could take a look at these guys and you could see, and I'm just throwing numbers out there. Let's go off of, you know, you said that they might have made $5 million combined this past year. And that's with them, you know, hustling and, you know, working all the dates and, you know, their shirts and stuff like that. With Sinclair, with all the money and capability that they got, they could go to the Young Bucks and say, hey, look, we'll give you a guaranteed paycheck of $2.5 million a year, which is what you made all last year. And then on top of that 2.5, you just sell your shirts, you get all that money, and, you know, you get your money from your bookings and stuff, and you just stay true to Ring of Honor and New Japan. So that would essentially, you know, double, you know, what they're making, and they could be making Roman Reigns money at that point to work for Ring of Honor and New Japan.
Yeah,
and they would have the creative control that you referenced.
Yeah, and you tell them, you know, stop working the indie shows. Hey, you work for us. You work for us in New Japan. Because like I said, the best way I see to do it is for New Japan and Sinclair, since all these people work both of their shows, is to come up with some kind of combined offer where it includes a certain amount of dates for ROH a year and a certain amount of dates for New Japan a year.
Exactly. Yeah, because, and I think you said this, or we might not have said this, we might have said this off-air before, but, well, you kind of referenced it a minute ago where you said that Cody wasn't so much worried about money as he is creative control. And I understand that the Young Bucks haven't had that big payday, but I think they're probably more in line with Cody, where if they got a decent payday, they might not get a payday as big as, like, say, Roman does, but if they got a decent guaranteed payday, that they would stay on the indie scene for their creative control because of some of the stuff that they said on Talk is Jericho when the three of them were on there, where, you know, they don't want to listen to other people. They want to form their own matches and they want to do their own thing. They kind of want to be their own boss.
Yeah. So, and then next year it becomes ROH and New Japan present All In.
Yeah.
Double or nothing. And it'll be like the show, even though, you know, they're paying, it's completely produced, written, and directed by the Young Bucks and Cody.
Man, it would be, yeah, it would be.
Because you would still keep that indie feel, but.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Can you imagine? And they go double or nothing. Let's say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Cody at one time said that they had looked and wanted to do it in Texas. They wanted to do an All In, or if not the first one, they've had thoughts about if they do another one, they wanted to possibly go to Houston. And then I think the Young Bucks said that they would like to do it in California.
Definitely, would definitely be in California.
Yeah. Okay, so let's say they do it in California then, and they go All In, double or nothing, and by double or nothing, let's see, what if they got a stadium that was twice as big and they wanted to sell 20,000 seats, man? I know you said yes earlier, but give me a percentage on what you think the chances are that they could sell out 20,000. Is it 100%, or are you just pretty confident?
If they kept the prices the same, 100%.
Really?
I think a lot of the reason that this sold out so quickly is because you could get a first row ticket for $100-something.
Wow.
As opposed to the $750. Or, excuse me, if you go WrestleMania prices, the $2,000 that it costs to go to WrestleMania.
Wow.
So if let's say you top the top tickets off at about 300, like you're in the first five rows for 300 and then the prices go down from there, I think it would sell out in 30 minutes just like it did again.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would. I mean, the reason I agreed to buy so many tickets and take my friends is because, seriously, for the 8 tickets, I didn't even spend what I spent on WrestleMania tickets last year.
Holy cow.
For 8 tickets.
Wow.
I bought 2 tickets to WrestleMania. I spent over $800. I bought 8 tickets to All In. I spent, I believe, it was a little under $600.
Wow. That's incredible, man. And yeah. To think that just shows that Cody and the Young Bucks are way more in touch with their fan base than the WWE is, you know?
Yeah.
They know that, or, you know, I guess more they feel, not so much they know, but they feel that, you know, they don't need to try to squeeze every dime out of the live attendance. They can easily, you know, make the tickets for less in exchange to get them there and to create a lifelong fan.
Yeah.
You know, as to on the flip side, getting one huge payday.
All you got to do is get them in the city. I mean, they milked the dollars with StarCast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They sold out every meet and greet they were in. You know, they did random meet and greets. I remember after they got the belts, I wasn't there because I went home and went to sleep. They said they went, Dana came out and said, hey, we're doing Cody and the Bucks are doing a photo op right now out here, and it's $100 cash only.
Wow.
And apparently they were there for like 2 or 3 hours.
This is at StarCast?
Yeah, this was on the night of the weigh-in.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, so.
And they probably had 1,000 people show up too.
Yeah, I just think if it's 200. Just think if it's 200 people at $100 a pop, you just make 20 grand an hour, split three ways.
Yeah.
How's that for an hour's work?
That's easy money, baby.
Yeah, it's easy money. And they were doing it all weekend. I mean, I can tell you, like, it was Cody and the Bucks were like 100 and that first meet and greet that I went to was $120. I think they sold like 350 tickets.
Wow.
Cody and Kenny was like $120. They sold about the same amount. Cody did, what, I think 2 or 3 signings, and they all sold out. So just think about it. They might not have got everybody on the ticket prices, but they got paid.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. That's and I wasn't even thinking about it. I wasn't even counting in StarCast. You know, when you talk about it like that, where you said they sold 200. I didn't even know about all the spot photo ops that they just kind of had at the spur of the moment. That's just adding on, you know, to the payday that they got. It's incredible.
Yeah, and Cody and Kenny, Cody and Frankie, they put their name on a cigar and they sold out.
Did they really?
$12 a cigar. They didn't. The cigar people didn't walk away with a cigar or a T-shirt.
Man, I got another number for you here. The StarCast convention sold 11,000 tickets, man.
Yeah.
11,000.
If you count all the meet and greets, all the kind of stuff, that doesn't shock me from even a little bit.
Right.
You couldn't stand in any of the big, if they were on BTE, I'm talking Cody, Kenny, the Bucks, Adam Page, Marty Scurll, if they were on Being the Elite, their line was sold out.
Wow. Man, it's incredible, man. I did not, and I'm going to be honest, like I did, you know, when we went up there and this you know, for a good little minute until I really started sitting down over the last 2 days and I really started digging into everything that Meltzer was saying, that all the, well, just, you know, all the facts that he was relaying, all the money that he was relaying. Like, I was not looking at the big picture of All In and StarCast. I was looking at it in the sense of creatively, they were changing the world of wrestling. And I was looking at it in the sense of they're going to get this big payday to do a show the way they wanted to do it. I was not thinking about how Cody's leading in an old school style of wrestling on top of that. I was not thinking about the 15 mini paydays that Cody and the Young Bucks were getting from doing spot signings and spot photo ops, just spur of the moment for $120 a piece. You know, I wasn't thinking about just how much merch they were really pushing. You know, I wasn't thinking about the cigars that they were making $12 a piece off of. Like, dude, another one here, High Spots reportedly had its biggest merchandise day ever at the convention, as well as its biggest weekend ever, which is huge because they're a key part of every WrestleMania weekend. That comes straight out of Wrestling Observer Newsletter right there.
Yeah.
And so that's another percentage that goes to the Bucks and Cody as well, right?
Yep, because they were selling the All In turnbuckles unsigned for $70. They sold out before we left. Then the next day after the event, they had the All In turnbuckles signed for $150. They sold out.
Wow. Yeah, and a percentage, I don't know if, I assume that they had some sort of, you know, a contractual agreement with ROH / Cody and the Young Bucks to be able to hawk stuff that had All In on it. I would imagine,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. You could buy the turnbuckle on High Spots before you even got there.
Really?
It was on High Spots like 2 weeks before.
So you could bring it with you and you had people sign it and stuff like that.
No, they even had you better. You pay for it, and then you pick it up at StarCast.
Oh, man, they had it all thought out.
So you pick it up. Like, I honestly said, after watching the show, I didn't know how good the show was going to be. If, let's say we rewound back to Friday and I know what I knew now, I would have bought the turnbuckle that day, and I pretty much met everybody on the show. The only person on the show I hadn't met was Rey Mysterio. So you rewind back to Friday, I buy the Rey Mysterio meet and greet, and I have that turnbuckle signed by everybody on the show.
Wow.
I mean, yeah, it would have been easy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. So at 0 hour, for people that don't know what we're talking about when we reference 0 hour, that is the first hour of the show that was played on WGN, out of Chicago, obviously. And that was to try to get some last-minute pay-per-view buys. It was the first hour of the show was on free TV. They estimate, or I guess they know now, that 196,000 viewers watched that first hour. 196,000 people. Tell me wrestling's not just growing by the day.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, WGN, who is not doing that well as far as ratings, you put a weekly TV show on. You put it on Tuesday nights. The reason you put it on Tuesday nights is because you know SmackDown's moving, right? You'll be going up against SmackDown for the first, let's just say we get the show out in June of next year. You'll be going up against SmackDown the first 4 months. But after 4 months, when SmackDown moves to Fox on Friday nights, you own Tuesday nights.
You
already there. You don't have it, because what some other people do is they move their show after the WWE moves the show. No, you go head to head with SmackDown. You go head to head with the B show on Tuesday. When that show goes, they're like, people that are used to watching wrestling on Tuesday, they're like, well, how about I turn it on WGN and watch this ROH show?
Yeah.
Because I've heard of these Young Bucks and this Cody guy. And I guarantee you'll probably be pulling the SmackDown numbers.
Do you think if they went head to head on SmackDown, do you think that they could overtake SmackDown in the ratings?
If you let Cody, the Bucks, and BT do what they do, yes.
Wow, I like it.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. If you let them do what they do, yes. Because right. People are going to go out. That's the whole thing about it. And I've stated this before. The being the elite fans are like a cult. They will go anywhere to support those people.
True.
The only reason that San Francisco didn't sell out for New Japan is because it was so close to All In. And they're like, okay, I've already bought my hotel, travel, and everything to Chicago. I can't squeeze in San Francisco the month before.
Right, right.
Otherwise, I would have been in San Francisco.
Yeah.
It was just too close. And San Francisco's an expensive city from everything I've always been told. So it's like, you have to space it out. You can't WWE it. You can't once a month it. You know, you probably like the one that they're doing in MSG with the ROH G1 Super Show. That's good. It's doing WrestleMania weekend. You're already there spending money for WrestleMania. Okay, I'm going to go to this show too. Then you have the show in August, September, like we're doing now. It gives everyone the months to save their money. It gives everyone some of the months to save their money and be at that next city. And then let's say you want to do something like this. Then you got Wrestle Kingdom in January. That's what you're going to do, is get the big numbers 3 times a year. Because you're not going to match WWE on the 12 times a year. Because you're just not WWE yet. But you want to build up and make those 3 shows blow anything that the WWE's doing out of the water. Just like All In did.
Yeah.
Because there's money. You know what I mean? You're not taking away from the WWE. You're just finding a new audience to get money from them.
Right, right.
Because I'm never going to not go to WrestleMania. Ever.
Right, right. Yeah, I've still got to go to WrestleMania. I can't believe, as big a fan as I am, and there's a ton of us out there that haven't been to WrestleMania, but that's something that I think every wrestling fan should get to experience once, and I haven't got to experience it yet, but yeah, I've got to go to WrestleMania as well.
Rumor is, and if this rumor is true, I'm going to be very happy, that 2020 is going to be in Atlanta. That's the rumor.
Really?
And if it's in Atlanta, then I'm taking Ryan and his kid with me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I dig it.
I just, when you go to Atlanta, there's a lot of suburbs around Atlanta and that you can stay in for fairly cheap.
Nice, nice.
It's not like, you know, it was like if you wanted to be anywhere near Dallas, it was really, really expensive, or in New York or anything like that. But in Atlanta, there's a lot of suburbs. You can stay in a hotel that likes the one we stayed in, where there was a lot of space.
I like it. I like it. So I was going to end this show on talking a little bit about what WWE did this week, but instead, I mean, we've already talked for like 55 minutes, so I just want to wrap up the last few minutes of this hour-long episode today with some questions for you. Does that sound good to you?
Sound good.
All right, man. So I have a two-part question for you here. Part one is, do you think Vince McMahon watched All In, and do you think that the success of All In has him worried in any way?
Absolutely. I don't think he watched it. I think he might have had someone watch it and kind of relay the information to him. Don't think he watched it. Do I think he's worried? No. Like I said, Walmart doesn't worry about the mom and pop shop.
I got you. Do you think, because, you know, a lot of people say that that Vince, at different points when he was battling against WCW, that some of his and his writer's best work came up you know, it kind of boiled to the top because they had that competition. Do you think that Triple H now has any of that mindset? Like, do you think, in other words, do you think this kind of excites him, Triple H, that is, that they're going to have or they're going to potentially have some people challenging them?
Yes, I used to say if you ask the question, did Triple H watch it? I guarantee you, he watched every minute.
Oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, oh, yeah, because Triple H is kind of becoming the face of creative.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of taking that Vince spot, so he's going to take anything as a personal affront. Of course, if he comes out, he's going to say, "Man, there's room for success for everybody," but not really, because he's literally buying up all the independent people, right. So there's not room for success. So no, I think Triple H paid attention. He saw what's going on, and I'm pretty sure we're gonna see some of the stuff done the WWE way, you know. And I don't think it'll work, because the reason that this worked is because it's the anti WWE. You can't take alt WWE and make it WWE and make people like it.
Right. Yeah, you can't be the establishment shouting anti-establishment remarks.
Yes.
Yeah, that kind of leads into another good question. Do you think that Triple H or, you know, just WWE creative in general, do you think that they will attempt to recreate something like this? And that can be done in a ton of different ways. I wouldn't even be able to begin to describe some of them, you know. But like,
if they are smart, they realize they can't. But I think they will. And I think what they will do is, and it's just a gut feeling, is kind of bring back, they had this, the whole fan pay-per-views where the fans were picking the matches, I could see that coming back.
Okay.
Where they have, like, a bunch of server, like, okay, these are the two people wrestling. What type of match are they going to get in? You know, you got to vote. You got to text, tweet, or whatever to get the vote. I could see them doing it again, because what I could see the WWE taking out of this show is that fans want ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know anyone that could put it any better, Floyd. That's absolutely amazing. Because I agree with that a ton. You know what I mean? I think wrestling fans are looking for something like that. Especially, millennials, basically, which is, I kind of fall in that random age where, like, I'm borderline, you know, Generation X and millennial.
We are called Xenials.
Xenials, okay. You know, I feel a mindset from both generations. You know, like, I grew up with, and I still live by a lot of viewpoints from both generations. But I think that the generation that is that makes up the biggest part of wrestling fans today do want some sort of ownership. They want accountability in their wrestling. You know, they don't want 2000-2001 WCW, where, you know, the product was shit and no one was taking responsibility for it. You know, they want someone to take responsibility for the product and be like, look, let's make
us as fans felt like this was our show.
Absolutely. 100%.
We didn't get a dime. We didn't get a dime, but this is our show. This is about us, and they delivered that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think wrestling fans, and me being one of them, I think we looked at this show and we're like, you know, hey, they're not paying us for this show, but they are giving us what we want, and that is because you know, we have finally found three wrestlers that know what that knows what the fan wants. And that being, you know, Cody and the Young Bucks.
They do? I mean, and that's the whole thing. Wrestling, fans in general just want to go to a show and have fun and see some good wrestling.
Right.
It's simple, but when you just start, when you start becoming like the WWE and you think there's a formula to it, that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah.
There was no formula. When they do All In, Double or Nothing, if they do All In, Double or Nothing, it will be nothing like this show.
Oh, you think so? You think they'll just totally throw it on its head?
No, they're just going to come up with something completely new. They're going to come storyline. They're going to take it to that next level. They're not going to be like, well, they like this, so what we're going to do is, well, we're going to put Kenny against Walter. Because, you know, Walter's a big indie guy. We're going to put the Young Bucks and Dakota against three other random guys. They're not going to go with a formula. They're going to throw that old formula away and come with something new. You might get Kenny and Cody versus the Young Bucks. Wow. You might get something like that, because that's how they think. They think outside the box. They have traditional wrestling storylines, but they're not going to give you the same crap again. They're gonna be like, oh, you like pork chops, peas, and carrots? Here's more pork chops, peas, and carrots. Well, maybe you like steak and shrimp this time. They're going to try to take you out of your comfort zone in wrestling. I think that was the whole thing with the Joey Ryan and the penises thing. They took you out of your comfort zone as a wrestling fan.
Right. I like it, dude. I like it a lot. My last question, is next for C. What's he going to do with it? How long is he going to have it? Who do you think, we know him for the title?
Me personally, I think he's going to do a long run. I think they're going to build a Nashville show around him. But because I think Cody is going to feel some ownership in building this title. So he's not going to give it up until he feels the next guy's ready.
I like it.
He feels like he's the next level. It was Tim Storm, then Nick Aldis. As far as a physical and a look, he was the next Storm from Tim, next level. Cody is the next level from Nick Aldis, because Cody is a star. He's a true star. He's the first star to hold this belt in a very long time. He's the first person that actually puts butts in seats to hold this belt. So when they do the anniversary show, Cody's name is putting asses in seats.
Yeah. Do you think Cody looks in the mirror of himself as, hey, I'm going to be the guy that brings this freaking belt back to prominence?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things. Cody and Brandy believe in Cody enough for everyone. They don't need anyone else to believe in them.
Yeah.
Because when they walked out that door, did he know he was joining the Bullet Club? No. Did he know he was going to be main event at a New Japan show with Kenny Omega? Did he know he was going to sell out Chicago? No. He walked out the door based on the confidence Brandy had in him and the confidence he had in himself.
That's awesome. That's so awesome to know, or to think that he could possibly be thinking like, yeah, I'm going to take this title that is grown in popularity in the last few years and has gained a little bit more relevance, and I'm going to get it as high as I possibly can go. I'm going to try my hardest to get it up there on the same level as the WWE World Heavyweight title. Really cool to think. The
main thing is, now he doesn't have to tie down the ROH Championship. They can use that to build someone else up. He doesn't have to tie down a belt in New Japan. They can use that to build someone else up. He can defend the NWA title on ROH Battle, Final Battle. He can defend the NWA title at Wrestle Kingdom. You know? Because he can always have that belt. So he can not only elevate, he's just added a belt to any company that he's in.
I like it, dude. I like it. Floyd, my man, tell everybody where you spend your weekends at, brother.
All right, Sunday, yeah, you can catch us on thechairshot.com. Our show is called Around the Ring. It is me, Floyd, your Floyd and Savior Johnson, with Ryan the Great Aaron. You can get catch us at facebook.com/AroundTheRing, okay? Twitter.com/AroundTheRing, okay? But, yeah, the link will be posted on the Chair Shot Sundays generally before noon. I am very proud to be part of ChairShot.com. And like I said, I mean, we were well represented at All In. So, you know, we're going to be at all the big events.
Absolutely, my man. And as you know, as everyone listening knows, that Floyd, Mike, and myself are part of the ChairShot.com family with this show as well, with Indie Wrestling Radio, and also my blog, Indie Wrestling Diaries, which is about my life in independent wrestling. Don't forget to follow Floyd and myself on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. Floyd, I want to say thank you for being on the show. I know we just kind of had a little chat, like today. We just had the numbers that we started out with, and I kind of just got to admit to you that I, in a weird way, I don't think I was giving Cody a fair shake these last year or two that he's been away from WWE, and I, the trip to All In and reading some of the stuff that I've read in the last 72 hours has really changed my perception of Cody, and now he's one of my more favorite stars in wrestling today. So I'm glad that we got to do this show, because this episode right here has been one of the funnest episodes I've had in quite a long time, maybe ever. Just getting to be able to tell you that and getting to pick your brain about Cody, who I think you know more about the wrestler Cody than most anybody I've ever met. So I appreciate you doing the show with me today, you finding the time. I think me, you, and Mike have really built this show into something special, and I think we're helping the Chair Shot build something special with Indie Wrestling Radio and Around the Ring. So I appreciate it very, very, very much. And for everyone out there, we appreciate you tuning in. We love getting to bring the show to you 5 days a week. So we really appreciate you listening every day. And for everyone out there, for Floyd and myself, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?